now, so after the Gemara, after Rav and Shmuel have established this Migo, so again, in the case where there are no Edim, then the Baal HaBayis is believed, and there is no Nishba V'notel. Oh, before we go on, did you all check the things that I asked you to look up? Anybody talk? Okay, well, first, did you know where, how do we know about that Migo is Menatora? Who did that one? Yes?
Well, on the Pasuk of Ebitina Pasuk, we know from there that Pesha Asa Pesha Hitir works.
That's right. So just explain what Pesha Asa Pesha Hitir is.
So if there is, if you don't know the status of something, that and one person, a person comes and says that this in some way makes that thing Asar, then also makes it Mutter. So this woman, if the father says she's married, which makes her an Isha Ish, so that makes her Asar. If he just says she's married, then she's Asar to everyone because we don't know who she's married to. But if he says she's married and she's married to this man, then she's Mutter to that man.
Right.
So that's Pesha Asa Pesha Hitir.
Because
you don't know her status at all. And
why
you're
don't you
believing
know her status?
Listen,
you
we
don't
know.
You don't know who she is. She's a girl.
They just moved into
she's
town.
Married.
No. A man has a daughter. Yeah. Now, we don't know anything about them. So the father comes in and says, you know, so if the father can marry off his daughter, let's say she's a katana, she's a minor. So according to the Torah, he's allowed to marry her off. Marry her off, actually, I don't mean walk her down the aisle. I mean, he can be that the husband-to-be gives the Kesef Kedushin to him, to the father, and the father stands in the place of his daughter. So in that situation, what if the husband, not the husband, what if the father says, you know, I married off my daughter, and I married her off to this man, Reuven. So do we believe the father? On the one hand, he said he married her off to somebody. Well, if he married her off to somebody, then she should be Asura to every single man in the world. But then he says, and the person that I married her off to is this particular Reuven, this man right here. So is she now Muteris to this man? The answer is yes. Why? After all, once he said she's been married, so how do we know to whom she's married? How can we let her sleep with any man? Maybe he's not the man that she married. Well, the father said he married her off to this man. So the din is, HaPesha Asar Hu HaPesha Hitir. The same mouth that forbade her. What do you mean forbade her? Forbade her to what or to whom? You understand? To the whole world is the same mouth that permitted her to this Reuven. So you can't, if you believe him for this, you believe him for that. If you believe him on the Pesha Hitir, then you have to believe the Pesha Asa Hu HaPesha Hitir. So let me just finish. So Chava, so what does this have to go ahead?
So according to Tosfos, that's the same concept as Migo. That Pesha Asa Pesha Hitir works through Migo. Because if the father wanted, like, if he wanted to make her mutter to everyone, if he wanted to lie, then he would have just said she's not married. He would have made her mutter to everyone. So the fact that he's the one who was Osir her, he's the one who said she's married. So if he wanted, and he said she's married to this man. So if he wanted to lie and say she's not, and he's making up the fact that she's married to this man, he could have just said she's not married at all. So the fact that he said she's married means that we believe him for the rest of it.
You understand? In other words, to make her muteris to this man, she could have simply said she was never married to anybody yet. And then they can just go get married. He comes along and says, she is married to this man. So is she muteris to this man? The answer is yes. So we're saying that's a Pesha Asa or a Pesha Hitir. What is basically behind this idea of a Pesha Asa or a Pesha Hitir? It's really amigo. Because to make her muteris to this man, he could have said what? What could he have said? She's not married yet to anybody. Well, the thing is, he's trying to tell us that he's the one, the father is the one who's telling us that she is muteris to this man because he married her off last week to this man. Now, do we believe him?
I said we need a ksuva.
They didn't write the ksuva yet.
Were there Edim?
We can't find them. Yeah, so you construct the case where the Edom went off to Medina Sayam and we don't know where they are.
Is that in these psukim, that what he's trying to say? He's trying to prove that they're married?
Well, that doesn't seem to be the point of the Chumash. The Chumash is onto something else, but in the process, it says, Esbiti Nosati Le'ish Hazen, the Gemara takes that pasuk and builds something from it. Well, it's not out of context, it's just it doesn't seem to be the major point of the Parsha of the Torah, what the Torah's not there coming to try to teach us the principle of Peshas or Peshet, it was coming to teach, was a different context. Yeah. I'm just saying within that context, if you take out this prat of this Pasuk, we happen to learn out from that very Parsha something which happens to be an important principle. No different than Gemara does this, you know, so often. Takes out of a parsha something that you might even think was totally insignificant and draw a principle out of it. And this is more directly from the pasuk, because the pasuk does say, I gave my daughter to this man. So, halachically speaking, that means he, the father, married her off. So it's from here that we know Migo. Migo means believe him in what he's saying, because he could have said, she's never married, I've never married her off to anybody, and now I'm ready to marry her off to this man. Okay? So the reason why I'm telling you this is because Migo, which is coming from that pasuk, is everyone agrees that this is a Dioraisa principle. And I don't think there's anybody who, when I say anybody, no Tana or no Amora, that rejects the principle of Migo. Now you'll see why this is going to be important. Okay, yeah.
Can I ask a question about the woman when her husband, she claims her husband died anymore?
Okay.
Does she say, I am sure my husband died in war? Or does she say, I think my husband died in war?
Well, let's say she says she saw or someone told her that he was shot. Or that, you know, they saw him injured in battle.
So halachically, do we consider that a ta'an and bari? Or do we?
Well, we no. Now, based on that, she says, "Well, he died. I mean, I assume he died." Now, is it possible that he recovered from his wound? Yes. Now she thinks maybe so many people who have that kind of a wound die. Now she's assuming he died. But it's very possible that he's still alive. So when she comes and she says he's dead, yeah, based on what the information that she has, she truly believes he's dead. But it could very well be that he's not, and she's just saying it based on what she assumes.
Right, because we were thinking that it's just when Tosfot says with the Baal Abayit Sachir case that when there's a Migo, we assume that the Baal Abayit is Bari. Right, but when there's no Migo, we assume that he's tired of pull up. So, like, why don't you just apply the same thing with the wife when her husband's in war? Like, when there's a Migo, so you assume that she's sure about it. But when there's no Migo, then you assume, well, maybe she's, like, been dummy. She's not sure.
Because, I mean, why don't we say that, well, we do believe her in a I mean, we don't believe her if she says that he died in war. We don't believe her, right? If she says Meis b'Melchama, we don't believe her because maybe she only said a bit of dummy. So you're asking, well, she has a Migo. So why don't we just assume that... Yeah, the only thing is, though, she knows what she knows. You know, she knows that, say, she didn't... It's not that... She claims she stood by her husband wounded until he died.
Right.
See, in the case with the Baal Abayit, he says, I paid. Now, it could very well be that he did. A person can know that. So I think that's, you follow. So therefore, in the case of Meis b'Melchama, it's just that what information she has, that's all she has is, it just might not be conclusive enough, or we think it's not conclusive enough to determine that he died. Although she thinks he died. So it's just not... No, we have to have something definitive that somebody has to tell us that he really died. Now, what she knows is just not... She thinks he died, but maybe he didn't. Yeah?
So then how does, like, when she tells us about the war, how does that help? She
because...
Still didn't know.
Well, it could be that maybe in that case where we don't even know there was a war, we don't know anything, and she's coming in, she's very carefully telling us that, and she could have simply said he just died, you know, in bed, and she comes in and she's giving us all these details about there was a battle, which we knew nothing about, and he died in battle. So maybe in that particular case, maybe what she knows is more.
She's not claiming she was by the battle.
Well, she must have, somebody, either she heard or she either she saw him or somebody told her about him.
Yeah, but shouldn't you think in a case where you haven't even heard about this war that maybe she's lying even more?
No, I don't see why it's even more.
But I'm saying, why? You said that the reason she's the dummy as opposed to the Baal Bayit is because she doesn't know everything about what happened. She's not claiming to know everything about what happened. She's just claiming that I have this assumption that he's dead based on the information I was given.
Well, I don't know how she's, I mean, I'm saying that that's how we interpret her. I don't know how much she says when she says my husband died in battle.
Right, but she's still saying that.
I mean, if we were to ask her, how do you know that? So she'll say, because he was stabbed. There was an arrow went right through his chest. I don't know. So the question is, and therefore he died. So we are saying
the same thing when there's.
I know what you're asking. I don't know. I mean, Tosfos just says a couple of words. Tosfos says, "Kaven the daika kulei high, shemachzekes milchama." I don't know. I mean, see, in a case where we know there was a battle and everything. Okay, I don't know 100%. I hear. I mean, why should it be that... Is she saying anything more when she is the one who's telling us there was a battle, but we didn't know about it without her? Is she giving us more detail about how she knows he died than if we knew there was a battle? I didn't think so. So what you're asking is, so then, my nafkin, what's the difference? All right, I don't know. I'll work on it some more. This is not our main... This is a side issue, so yes.
When we looked up the Torah Tumah, he said that this pasuk teaches us pasuk here, and that total of equates out with Nigo.
Right.
Implied that not everyone equates out with Nigo.
Right.
So if you see this, there are two independent things. I mean, this is total, so it doesn't work for total. But if you see the two independent things, then maybe this is that. This case as a woman doesn't work really through Nigo. It works through pasuk and pasuk here. If she didn't want to tell us there was a war, she wouldn't have said it. But since she said it. It's not that it's necessarily logical that we believe her more.
No, but what they're asking is, what's the difference if it's Hechzika b'Milchama or not?
Because if Hechzika b'Milchama, it's Hesh Asa Hesh Hitya,
and we... I mean, we just don't then... Maybe then we don't even ask questions.
Right, she could have just said there was no war, and everyone would have believed her.
I know that, but her claim is... And therefore we should believe her when she says there was a war, and he died in it.
If we don't know that she's married to begin with, don't we say Pesha Asa Pesha Hitya anyway?
Yeah, because that's very possible that he married her off to this man. It's not something that people...
Not the father case. If a woman comes to a town and she says, I'm a widow.
Because...
Period.
Yeah.
Don't we assume that if we don't know if she was married to begin with...
Oh, no. We do know. In the case in the Gemara there, we do know.
I know, but let's say we didn't know she was married. Then wouldn't we just believe her? Because Pesha Asa Pesha Hitya, if she says, I was married...
If she says I was married and then my husband disappeared and I just assume he's dead.
No, not she says that.
Well, that's
she
the
comes in and says, we don't know her. She never lived there. She comes to the town and says, I was married. My husband died.
Do we know that there was a milchama in the...
She doesn't specify. It's not the same case.
I know that, but you're saying to me, we don't know anything about her. She comes in, she says, I just came from that country where everybody knows there's a big civil war going on there. Everybody's killing everybody. She says, I just came from that country. I was married and my husband died there and now I'm here.
Well, don't we say that if...
I don't know if we would believe her.
But if Pesha Asa, Pesha Hitya...
The Pesha Asa will believe, but the Pesha Hitya we're not ready to believe because how does she know he died? Maybe she just thinks he died. Maybe he just disappeared.
But if she didn't want to do that, she wouldn't have said...
I understand, but that's exactly the issue. If we know, because the Gemara, when the Gemara brought up should the Migo work or not in a case where there is a Migo...
But there we know she's married. the difference.
Yeah, I know, but it's the same principle. So we don't know anything about how he died. She could have simply said he died in bed.
So she could have said she wasn't married to begin with.
I understand that. So now the question is, either one, she had something to say where she would have won. She would be believed that she's single at the moment. But the claim that she's actually making is that he died in war. Now, a claim like that is not a convincing claim, because how does she know he died? Maybe he didn't die.
So there are cases where we don't apply Hesh also Hesh anything?
Well, that was the Hezika bin Luchama, the Gemara raised an answer. That was an Abaya. That was a question there. Do we rely on the Migo or not?
But we have a Chazaka that she's Aser, because the last thing we know for sure is that she's married.
Yeah, so she tells us she was married, even though we didn't know it before. So she made herself Aser.
So I thought that was the whole point of Pesha Aser Pesha Hittir, that if
provided that the Pesha Hittir is something that we know that the person is in charge of, is capable of knowing and doing.
She's capable of knowing whether or not he's dead. Our question is really whether or not we trust her to act.
Well, that's the point, to say that we just don't feel that what she knows is enough to indicate to us that he died.
Why?
I think we should move on. All right.
Let's
move on. Those we're never gonna. If you want to ask me privately, I'd be glad to. Let's move on. So the Gemara then launches into a very interesting discussion between Rava and Rami Bar Chama. About what? Rami Bar Chama, what? Who can tell me? What did Rami Bar Chama say? The first wide line on Mem Hei on the base, at the end of the line, Amar Rami Bar Chama, Kama Ma'al Yahash Mata. Which means what? Tzipor, what does that mean?
Like how great this is,
like, yeah. Yeah, which. When what was Rami Bar Chama referring to when he said how great this is?
The idea that was mentioned before, like maybe with the Migo?
Maybe, or are you sure or you're not sure?
Like the idea of the Migo.
Of which Migo?
The Baal Habayit could say, if there are no Eidim there, then he could just say, well, I never hired.
Right. This Migo, right? This whole idea that the only time that a Sachir is Nishma Venoto is only where there are Eidim. But if there are no Eidim that he was hired, then there's no Nishma Venoto, Lehefech, the Baal Abayis is believe him that he paid, because he could have said, I never hired the guy, right? So Rami Bar Chama was very impressed with this halacha, and he said, Kama Ma'alya, how great, how good this halacha is. So Rava says back to him, what's so good about it? What's so great about it? Who can continue? Why did Rava think that this halacha, really it's a halacha that Rav and Shmuel said and Rami Bar Chama praised? Rava is not impressed with it at all. Lehefech, he has a critique of it. Yeah, what's the critique? Yes?
That if this logic is correct, then it should extend to the Shomer's case insofar as he should be.
Okay, so let's first stop a moment and make sure we all know the halachos, at least that we need to know about a shomer. So let's say if you were teaching a class and you had to tell them the pertinent information of what you need to know about a shomer in order to understand this Gemara, what would you say? Now, you want to give background. You don't want to sit there and spend 2 days on background. You want to just give enough of a background so that everybody understands what's going on. So, what would you say? Yes?
You have to know what a shomer is chayav, when he's chayav to swear, pay, or when he gets...
Okay, so go ahead, continue. So now tell us. Tell us what we need to know.
Well, I think the shomer they're referring to here, the shomer sachar.
Okay, let's say that they are. And what is the halach of a shomer sachar?
So,
shomer sachar means he's watching for pay.
He's getting paid.
He's getting paid to watch. He's not doing this as a favor. A shomer who's doing it as a favor is called a shomer chinam. Go ahead.
If the object he's washing gets stolen, he's chayav to pay the owner.
That's right.
And if he's ones, like something happens against his will.
Well, it doesn't always have to. It's against his will, but ones means it's against his will because he couldn't stop it.
He couldn't stop it at all.
Give an example.
Like,
make up anything you want.
I think that the pasuk says that, like, a wild animal
came. Yeah. Let's say he was watching, an animal, a domesticated animal, and some wild animal came and just killed him. What was he supposed to do? Fight a lion? He couldn't fight the lion. So he was helpless. Or let's say some natural disaster. And the thing that he was watching, if the Nam died or if it was an object, was destroyed. Couldn't do anything about it. So this is called an ones. Now, if the Shomer Socher claims that an ones happened, then what? What's the halacha?
He's free.
Well.
Then he has to swear. Oh. He has to swear.
Swear what?
That he was not negligent with the object.
And also that really what happened to the object was?
Ones.
It was an ones, I mean. Obviously the object is gone. So he says, you know what happened? There was a big storm and the barn door blew off and the animal went off and got killed, something. So the Shomer Socher says that's what happened. It wasn't my fault at all. It was a real onus. So he has to swear to the Balabai. And the Balabai wasn't there. He doesn't know anything. He gave this animal to this person to watch. He's going to pay him a salary. Balabai went off on some vacation, comes back, finds out the Shomer Socher says this happened. It was an onus. So the Shomer Socher is potter from paying, provided that he swears. This is one of the Shavuos HaTorah, right? We're talking about Shavuos HaShomim. This is it. So he has to swear that this is what happened. There was an onus. He wasn't negligent and so on. Once he swears, he's potter from paying. Okay, very nice. Now what? So now what is Rava thou saying to Rami Bar Chama? So continue.
So he's saying that how could we find that...
You don't have to translate the words.
Why would we make the Shomer Sachar that he wasn't negligent, he was honest? He could have just said, you never gave it to me to wash in the first place.
So what are you introducing?
That there should be a Nigo there.
Okay. Says Rava to Rami Bar Chama, you're praising the halacha of Rav and Shmuel. What are you praising it so much for? Because if Rav and Shmuel are right, and you think they're right, then any shomer, for example, a shomer sechel, a case that we just described, who claims onus, the Torah says he has to swear, right? Asks Rava, why does he have to swear? He shouldn't even have to swear. We should just believe him when he says it's an onus, because he has a migo. What's the migo? The migo is, what? Just repeat. You never gave me. I have no idea what you're talking about. You never gave me an animal to watch. You never hired me. The whole thing is totally false. Now you have to understand what that. So let's forget about everything. Let's just talk about such a case. We have to know what the halach is. If you claim that you gave me an animal to watch, so there are no witnesses, there's nothing. Now you come back and say, can I have my animal back? And I say to you, I don't know what you're talking about. You never gave me anything to watch. I don't know who you are. That's the case. There's no edim, there's nothing. You're saying to me, give me back my animal that I gave you to watch. And I say back to you, Lohayu devarim me'olam, right? The whole thing never happened. What's the halacha? Hamotzi mechavera, olof haraya, nobody, let's see, minatara, there's nothing, there's no shvua, there's no payment, there's nothing. It's my word against your word. I'm a kofar, let's say the alleged shomer is a kofar hakol, denies the whole thing, and that's it. See, when a shomer, though, says it died ba'onis, he is not a kofar hakol. What is he acknowledging? I'm acknowledging that I was a shomer. I'm acknowledging you gave me the animal to watch. I'm acknowledging you offered to pay me. Everything. But what I'm saying to you is an onus happened to the animal. Isn't that right? So I'm acknowledging I'm a shomer, but I'm claiming that I'm potter from paying, of course, provided that I swear, because as a shomer socher, I'm potter for onus, if I swear. So the Gemara, so Rava says, what do you, to Rami Bar Chama, you're so impressed with that halach of Rav and Shmuel, what are you so impressed about? If that's the case, then every shomer, let's say a shomer socher who claims onus, and the Torah says he has to swear, why does he have to swear? He should be believed without having to swear with amigo, because he could have said what? Lahadam, and send that the acronym Lahadam, Lohayu Dvarim Me'olam. Could have said that, and he would have won if had he said that. So when he says that, yes, I had the animal to watch, but it died ba'ones, you should believe me for that too, and I shouldn't even need to swear. I just want to get through the Gemara, then we'll take questions. This is what Rava said. So, what did Rami Bar Chama, or any, we don't know if it's him, or let's say it was him, what did Rami Bar Chama answer back? Did he answer him back? Yeah, so, what did he answer him back? What?
He hired him and had
an agent. Okay. So, what is talking about a case? Where, and those you're saying, the Torah itself. Amazing. That when the Torah says that a Shomer has to swear, right, if he claims onus, for example, says Rami Bar Chama, the Torah is speaking in a very specific case. What's the case? Where when the Balabayas hired the Shomer to watch the animal, he hired him in front of two witnesses. You understand how that matters? Now there's no Migo anymore. What was the Migo? The Migo is, I don't know who you are, I never agreed. Well, that would be contradicted by two Edim. So he could never make that claim. So this is what Rami Bar Chama says. Which means, what is Rami Bar Chama acknowledging if there were no Edim?
Then
the Shomer has a Migo and he would not have to swear? Amazing. But then Rava comes back with a counter argument that what?
What's even the... If there were Edim,
yeah, that even if there were Edim, he still has a Migo. Why? Well, you'll have to just modify. What is the Migo claim, the potential claim? Not that Lohoyu Devarim Me'olam, that won't work. I already returned the animal to you. Now, do you understand? Now, what would be, let's just talk about that case. Because you have to understand the case. I claim that I gave you an animal to watch. And you say, yeah, you did, but I returned the animal to you already. Of course, I say that's not true. What's the halach in that case? You're a kofar kol again. See, you're not, when you claim an onus, you're acknowledging that the animal, while it was under your shmira, something happened to it. You understand? Now, if you were to claim you never took the animal to watch or you returned it already, basically you're saying either I was never a shomer or I'm no longer a shomer. If you return it to me, you're not responsible anymore. So that's a kofar hakol. You understand the difference? You have to make sure, as opposed to what? What's not a kofar hakol?
Onus.
Because there you're acknowledging I'm a shomer, I was watching it, I'm responsible for it, but this happened to it. Which the Torah does not, which I'm not liable for. Just one second. So what Rami Bar Chama said back to him was, that's why, so the Migo still has a Migo. What would be the Migo? Believe me that it died by onus, because I could have said I returned the animal to you. So what did Rami Bar Chama come back and say? Bishtar. What's Bishtar? Just tell me what that means. Sharon, what does that mean? What do you mean Bishtar? Who gave who what? Who gave who what?
So when the owner gave the shomer an animal, there was a document that if the shomer should have given the owner, and then when the owner gets the animal back, he returns the document.
Go ahead. And what is the Torah's case where there is a shvua? So he gave a shvua. So therefore, what? So if the shomer were to say,
there's no claim that the shomer. There's no legal claim that the shomer can make.
Yeah. See, that's a powerful argument. Let's see, if I have a shtar, what Rami Bar Chama answers is that the Torah is even speaking in a more narrow case. There was actually a shtar. Now, if there was a shtar, the shtar was signed by two witnesses. So not only were two witnesses present, they actually signed the shtar, which was then agreed to by the shomer and then handed over to the balabayas. Now, normally, it's like an IOU if you borrowed money. You know, when you pay off your debt, you get back the IOU. I mean, you'd be very insistent in getting it back, but you don't want to leave the IOU with the lender because you're afraid he might come back and try to claim the money a second time. So this is not something people normally would forget about. So if the Shomer had returned the animal already, then he certainly would have demanded back the shtar. Now the Baal HaBayis still has the shtar. So therefore what? So he has no migo. He can't claim lahadam, nor can he claim hechazarti. So he has no migo. So since he has no migo, that's when the Torah says the Shomer would have to swear in order to be potter from paying. Which is quite amazing that the Parsha of the Torah, the whole Parsha there in Parsha's Mishpatim, where it talks about what? The obligations of a Shomer, that he has to swear this, he has to swear that. According to the conclusion of this Gemara, according to Rami Bar Chama, the way he's defending, you know, his position, is only in a case where a shtar was given. That when the Shomer took the animal to watch, he gave the Baal HaBayis a shtar. But Rami Bar Chama is acknowledging if there is no shtar, they just did it verbally, you know, they just trusted each other, there is no shtar, then what? He would never have to swear. Because he has a migo, he could have said, I returned it. Even if there were witnesses, you know, two people standing there watching, he still could have said, hechazarti. This is clear to everyone. So this is the Gemara. This is a very... there are a lot of problems with this little piece of Gemara. I don't know if... No, some of the problems you might not realize because if you haven't learned enough, you know, anything about Migo. But there is something that I think should bother everyone, especially in light of the fact that I told you that Migo is Minatora. Let's assume that the Koach of a Migo is Minatora. What should... There's something about the sugya that just doesn't make sense. Yes, what would...
Can I just do a quick question before that?
Okay.
What does the Gemara mean when it says, Tishtar tzarich lahavir lo be'edin?
Yeah. That... Who can tell me? Who can answer that? Where the Gemara said, Hamaf gereitz lachavir be'edim, ein tzarich lahachzer lo be'edim. Bishtar tzarich lahachzer lo be'edim. Who knows what that means? Yes.
It sounds like he's giving another reason why if he was watching it by a shtar that there is no migo because it has to be returned with Aiden.
It's not another reason. It's this is...
Meaning one, that the shtar is still with the other guy, and two, that there had to have been Aiden.
Well, it's the reason. Why is it? What is the halacha about a shtar? In other words, let's say a new case. I claim that I gave you an animal to watch, da da da, and I come back, I want the animal back, and you say you returned it to me already. Now I have a shtar. I still have the shtar. So what's the halacha? So who wins? I do. Now. So what is the only way you, the shomer, can make the claim that you returned it to me? If I have a shtar, let's say the following case. Let's say I come to you, you're the shomer, and I want back the animal. And I have a shtar. So you'll say to me, okay, I'll give it back to you. So you say, yeah, I'll return it to you, but I want the shtar back. So I say, oh, I forgot it at home. And I live 100 miles away. I forgot it at home. So you are a little nervous. So what can you do? So you have two options. Either say, I'm not giving you back the animal until you... So go home, get the shtar, and come back. Or what else could you do? Let's get two Edim who will witness the fact that I've returned the animal to you. So this way, if I'm a crook and I produce the shtar and say, you never gave me back my animal, you can produce the two Edom to testify that in fact you did. So therefore, the only way to protect yourself against the shtar, other than by having it returned to you, would be, is to return the item with two Edom present. Which is not the case if what? See, that statement that we're referring to is distinguishing between having a shtar or edim. What do you mean having edim? What would it be if two edim witnessed that I gave you the animal, but there was no shtar written? And then afterwards you claim you returned it to me, but there are no edim to testify to that fact. Do you still win? Yes. So what is the point of, why is Gemara telling us this? This is to show us that wherever there's a shtar, and if the Baal HaBayis still has the shtar, then what's the halacha? The shomer will lose. Because the only way he could win is if he can produce Aden who saw him return the animal, which is not what we're assuming is happening in the case that we're discussing. In the case that, what is the case that the Torah is discussing where it says that the shomer has to swear, is where a shtar was written, and there are no edim who could testify to what? That they saw him return the animal. So memela, there's no migo. So this is corroborating this statement of the shtar, tzorech lahachzir lo be'edim, is supporting the fact that when there's a shtar, the shomer is going to lose. You understand? Okay, so what is difficult about this Gemara? Right off the bat, it's just something that just... Yes?
The fact that the... Okay, the Shua HaShomrim is a Din D'Oraita, right? Okay, so it's one thing if you're going to apply a Migo to the Sacher Baal HaBayis case, because the Sacher Baal HaBayis case is a Shua D'Rabbanan, and so if you have a Migo that's D'Oraita, that can uproot the D'Rabbanan Shua, or it takes away the D'Rabbanan Shua, because Rabbanan wouldn't have instituted a Shua in that case. But... In the Shua Shomrim, there is a specific Shua Midioraita that tells, like, it's a Shua Deoraita, so a Migo Deoraita can't uproot it.
Why not?
Because
there are two Deoraita principles.
Yeah, but if you, I thought that if you have two Deoraita principles, Migo is a general principle, but Shua Shomrim is a specific Deoraita principle to tell you that this principle is a Yotzei Min HaKlal from the general Migo.
Oh, well, that's not what the Gemara is ready to do. I mean, the Gemara is not saying that in this particular case, Migo doesn't work. Lehefech really does work, except if there would be a shtar. But something else bothered me. Tell me, why did Rava ask this Kasha? Kasha from Shomer. Why did he ask it?
If Migo applies to the case of the Shomrim, then why is it written in the Chumash the way it's written?
That's what bothered him?
Really broad.
Not completely. That's not what bothered him.
Is he writing about Chumash
enthusiasm? Yeah. Enthusiasm for what?
For the halacha
about the Sachir and the Baal HaBayis. Isn't that what's going on? Rami Bar Chama said... What?
You're saying you can do that writing for the Shomer. Why is it so novel over here?
No. What do you mean? You go. Want to say it again?
It's a question that if you learn Torah and you learn that halacha and if shomrim in the Torah,
yeah,
and you learn it properly, you learn it with this idea of being it with a shtar. Why is it so novel when you hear this idea about the sacher?
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if it's clear the way she said it. And let me repeat. Look what's happening. Rami Bar Chama is praising this halacha that Rav and Shmuel told us. Now, Rav and Shmuel were talking about the sochir with the Baal HaBayis, right? What did he say again? That if the Baal HaBayis has a Migo, since Migo is effective, the Baal HaBayis will win. And Rami Bar Chama praised it. So Rav says, what are you praising it for? Because if you're right, then... Every shomer, a shomer should never have to swear because of a migo. Isn't that right? To which Rami Bar Chama responded, finally, yeah, the Torah is only demanding it if there's a shtar. So the question is, let's imagine Rav and Shmuel never said anything. They didn't say a word. Couldn't you ask this kasha about a shomer regardless of Rav and Shmuel? If you know there's a concept of Migo, and Migo is a Deoraisa concept, which it is, well, then the concept of Migo is conflicting with what other concept? The Shavu of the Shomer. Isn't that a question I should ask regardless of whether there happens to be a Migo for the Baal HaBayis against the Sochir? It's only because there's a migo of the balabais against the zochah. That's why Rav is asking the kasha from Shomer. I would ask that kasha even if I never learned this Gemara Shavuos about Rav and Shmuel. I would ask this kasha if I was learning Chumash and I knew that there's something called the migo and I knew something about migo. I would have asked, why does the Shomer have to swear? Let's believe him with a migo. He could have said, I returned the animal or I never got the animal. Then I would have realized that the Torah must be talking in the case of a shtar. Wouldn't that bother you even if you didn't learn this Amud of Gemara? Rava seems to be asking this question only because of what? You understand? Because of what Rav and Shmuel said that Rami Bar Chama thinks is great. Mashma that if Rav and Shmuel hadn't said it, or if Rami Bar Chama hadn't praised it, Rava wouldn't say anything. Why? That to me sounds like a kasha that I would have asked even if Rav and Shmuel hadn't said that halacha. What does it have to do with Rav and Shmuel? Rav and Shmuel were the ones who created the idea of Migo? Well, we don't know about a Migo before we read this Gemara. We know about Migo. Everybody holds of Migo. You don't need Rav and Shmuel to tell you about a Migo. You follow? Yes.
But maybe Migo doesn't necessarily... Migo, meaning listening to, believing someone's claims, because they've had a better one, it might be that you still believe them, but maybe it's going to be the Shua, if it's the case of the Shua. And the Migo might not get rid of the
Shmuel,
it's only Rav and Shmuel.
Okay, so very nice. You really hit on something which is, which led, but what the Chava said is, right, really, she got it on the head, that there are Rishonim who came to the conclusion that the issue in this Gemara is about the effectiveness of a Migo against a shvua in particular. Because everybody knows that a migo is effective min haTorah. The issue is, though, is a migo so effective that it could eliminate the need for a person to have to swear? Because a migo can certainly be effective to win what? In order to win what? What is he trying to get?
Money.
Right? Money. I'll give you an example. You come to me and you see that I have this watch, and you say to me, give me back my watch. So I say to you, what do you mean? It's my watch. So you say, no, it's your watch. So I say, yeah, it was your watch, but I bought it from you. Now you claim I stole it from you. So I'm acknowledging it was your watch, but I'm saying I bought it from you. And you're saying, no, you didn't. You just took it. Now, I'm believed because I have a Migo. What's my Migo? I could have said I walked into the store over there and bought the watch. There are a million of these around. There's nothing unique about this one to indicate that it was ever yours. So in that particular case, what does the Migo do? It gives me the ability to keep money or something that has the value of money. So certainly Migo is effective for that. The question that Rishonim, and this we'll see is a big machlokas or Rishonim, this is what I mentioned to you, that there are a lot of other Mahar Makamas that I have to give you. It's about this. Is Migo effective to eliminate the need to have to take a Shvua if the Halacha demands a Shvua from you? Because if the Halacha demands a Shvua from you, but you have a Migo, can a Migo pater you from a Shvua? Now, if you assume that the answer is what?
Yes.
If you assume the answer is yes, then the question that I asked before remains intact. That if everybody knows that, so why Rava shouldn't be asking his kasha from Shomer because of what Rami Bar Chama and Rav and Shmuel said, he should ask that kasha no matter what. But if you assume what?
Yeah.
That a Migo cannot... Of course, we would have to understand why, that a Migo cannot pater a person from Shavua. It can't. why it should be ineffective when it comes to a shvil, that has to be analyzed. But let's say if that's the halacha, if you assume that, then this gemara can make more sense. Who could do it? Then the question that I just asked you before, you could answer it. Who can do it? If Migo does not work to eliminate Shavua, then Ravis Kasha makes perfect sense.
Right.
Yes. Devar, can you?
Because then how could they say that?
Who's they?
Rav and
Shmuel. Yes.
Say that you, unless there's, that you, when there's no Eden, you, he has an ego.
Yeah.
So then, like they.
Yes, yes. And what does the Migo do?
Migo says that he doesn't, that the Sacher can't be, that there's no Shvua.
So in that case, that the Sacher has no Nishba Venoto.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're saying that the Migo does override.
Yes, that's right.
So then that's a good.
So Rava says if a Migo can somehow, you know, because if somebody has a Migo, then that's it. Shavua, there's no, it can counter a Shavua. If that is really true, says Rav, if this is all right, there's something tricky about this, maybe that's what's bothering you. So Rav says, if you're right then, that a Migo can actually potter, can get rid of a Shavua, then why would a Shomer have to ever swear he has a Migo? See, as long as I think that what? As long as everything seems to be consistent with the halacha that what? That a Migo cannot pater from a Shavua, then I understand everything. Then if a Migo cannot pater from a Shavua, then in what circumstance does the Torah say a Shomer has to swear?
Okay.
In every circumstance. There are Eidim, no Eidim, Shtar, no, it doesn't matter. I as a Migo, so what? Migo never paters from a Shavua. So as long as I see that, then I understand the halach of Shomer. But now Rava says, but you, Rami Bar Chama, you think that what Rav and Shmuel said is correct. Now what did they say? They say that when the Balabais has a Migo, then the Socher doesn't swear anymore. It's as though the Migo eliminates, can just, once there's Migo, there's no Shvua, because we just believe the Balabais. So if that's the case, then in the case of Shomer, if the Shomer has a Migo, why would he even have to swear? We should believe Migo. To which Rami Bar Chama had to answer finally, that what? That the only time that what? That a Shomer would have to swear is where he doesn't have a Migo, because Rami Bar Chama is of the belief. Because what's then the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel versus Rava? Whether a Migo can eliminate Shavua. Now, there's something tricky about this because the Shavua is coming from different people. Is that what's bothering? Yeah, what?
Well, it's not just different people. It's Doraita versus Drabana. I mean, couldn't you answer Rava that way and say that Shavua Shomer is Doraita and, you know, Migo isn't going to overcome that, but this is just a Takana anyway, and a Migo is a Doraita.
You're right, and that's what you're saying is exactly what some Rishonim answer. We're going to see the Rush says exactly what you just said. So you're machaving to the Rush. But what happened is that there was a whole discussion which was ensued from Rishonim about can Amigo pater from a Shavua or not. That was one big discussion that all came out of this Gemara, and Rishonim are debating it. You see, the thing is this. If you believe that a Migo can pater from a Shavua, then what? Then the kasha that I asked at the beginning is still a good kasha. Namely what? Because if everybody knows that a Migo can pater a Shavua, that's never... Then why did Rava have to only ask this kasha from Shomer because of what Rav and Shmuel said? Even without Rav and Shmuel, he should have asked that kasha. If everybody knows that a Migo can pater from a Shavua. Yes, there are Rishonim who learn that a Migo can pater from a Shavua.
Even according to the Rava?
Yes, And Rava's question is only a kasha because of what Rav and Shmuel said. It sounds like it's impossible, but this is what all the Rishonim discuss. So if you're asking about that, let's wait, unless there's something that I've said that, you know, just that you don't understand. And then we're going to come. So I wonder what I'd like to do is I just want to get through the sugya, because we're in the middle of talking about a sochir and a balabais, and I don't want to then just go off now for several days about this, and then we have to come back to it. I'm afraid we'll, you know. So while it's still fresh in our minds, I'd like to just finish the sugya. Yes?
I have a question on what we said was tricky about this.
Yes.
Like, I don't understand the answer at all that, I mean, like, it's tricky because one Shvuah is the plaintiff and one Shvuah is the defendant, but that's something we're willing to overlook.
Yes.
I don't understand at all how you can overlook that, because if you have a Migo on the defense, okay, when you take away a Shvuah from the plaintiff, it means that the defendant can no longer lose money, right? But
it's also mean that the Migo is strong enough that if the Socher were to swear, we just wouldn't believe it because the Balabais has a Migo.
Right, so the Migo may be strong enough to not let the defendant lose money, but it may not be strong enough to not have the defendant swear at all.
Yeah, but it is saying, but let the plaintiff, let the Socher swear, because if he swears, we would trust the Shvua more than Amigo.
Are
you talking about in the Socher case?
Yeah.
What's the issue there? The issue is let the Socher be a Nishma Venoto.
Right.
Now, the opposing idea would be, no, let's not let him, because the Balabais has Amigo, and we should trust the Amigo. So here we have a choice. We can trust the Amigo, or we can, in a sense, trust the Shvua of the plaintiff, the Socher, and let him swear and then award him the money based on the Shvua. So you're really talking about the effectiveness of the Migo protecting the Balabais versus the effectiveness of the Shvua to give him the chance to collect the money.
But even according to Rav and Shmuel, if the Migo works enough insofar as the plaintiff cannot be Nishma Venotel, did Rav and Shmuel imply that the Balabais is not Nishma Veniftar? Did we just believe him?
Yeah, unless you're talking about the Shavuos Hesseis, which, you know, which comes up later on.
How do we know that? How do we know that Rav and Shmuel say the Balabai doesn't have to be Nishma Veniftar?
No, without Shavuos, there is Shavuos Hesseis, but
no.
Based on what? Why would he have to swear? Based on what?
Okay.
There is no Shavuos, except Shavuos Hesseis, but that would be true in any case of denial. Yes.
On Becky's point, seems that Rashi on Memzav was implying that they did that they're saying that there is a Shvuah.
Okay, so let's wait until we get to the Gemara. And that's why I said a lot of what we were talking about Shvuah's Hesseis, we had to wait until we got to Memzav. So that's exactly what we're going to do. So let's continue. We just have 5 minutes. So the Gemara then comes back to the Socher Balabais. So what's interesting is the Gemara just leaves the Shomer case, that the only instance where the Shomer has to swear is what? Was the Shtar, because then Rava didn't come back with any counterclaim. So the discussion ended. Okay. Then the Gemara said, you understand the wording, what happened? Kari, Rami Bar Chama, Alei the Rav Sheshes. You understand what's going on there? Who knows? What did that mean? Kari, Rami Bar Chama, Alei the Rav Sheshes, Vayasim David Sadvarm, Ha'ela Belibo.
He said that pasuk about Rav Sheshes.
Yeah.
Why that pasuk about Rav Sheshes?
Yeah, and what does that mean to you?
That he was like curious, I think, that he wanted to like set out to find something.
Yes, he says that, if look at Rashi explains it, right? Kari Rami Bar Chama, Shesom Alev, Lodas, and Isa Lahodishmu Varavdala El Ilo. You see what that means?
He set out to find out.
Yeah, in other words, that Rami Bar Chama said about Rav Sheshes exactly what you said, that he was a very inquisitive, curious person, where he wanted to know whether we follow what Rav and Shmuel said or not. How does Rami Bar Chama know that about Rav Sheshes? because of what the Gemara continues to tell us. The Ashkeche Rav Sheshes L'Rabba Bar Shmuel, because Rav Sheshes found Rabba Bar Shmuel, Omer Le, who said to who here? Yes. Tani Mar Midi Besachir? What does that mean?
You did something about
Sachir. Yeah, did you learn something about a Sachir? It's like saying, what'd you learn today in yeshiva? Tani, did you learn something about a Sachir? So Amar Lei, what did he tell him?
Yeah.
And yes. And this is what I learned. So the Gemara, he goes on to mention a Braisa. Now remember, all these people, Rav Sheshes, these are all Amorayim. So what's happening is Rav Sheshes knew this Braisa. He knew it. Now people only knew things from memory, you know. So, I mean, a lot of what they knew was from memory. So Rav Sheshes taught this Braisa. But Rav Sheshes is not a Tana. What? I thought Rav Sheshes. Omrele in Tanina. Well, Rabbi Bar Shmuel, Rav Sheshes. Oh, I'm sorry, you're right, I got it backwards. It's because Rav Sheshes had said to Rabbi Bar Shmuel, and Rabbi Bar Shmuel answered him. So Omrele in, right, I'm sorry, it's Rabbi Bar Shmuel. So Tanina, we learned. Now let's go over this case. Socher Bismano Nishba Venoto, right? Ketsa, Bisman Shamarlos Khartani, Lonasato Lishori, Vahalo Omer. What's Vahalo?
Yeah.
The other guy, right? And the other guy says, that's the Balabayas, Khartiha Vanasati Lachaschor, I hired you, but I paid you. Then what? That's where the Sakhir is what? Nishba Benoto. Avalomarlo Stein Kotsatsvali. But if the case where the worker says, the Sakhir says, you agreed to pay me too. V'hala omer lo katzatzi l'chela achas, but the Balabaya says, no, I only agreed to pay you one. Then, hamotzi mechavero olav haraya. Period. That's this braisa. So what is the braisa saying in a case of katzitza? Again, when I say katzitza, I mean where the debate is how much did he agree to pay him. If it's a debate about katzitza, then says the Braisa, Hamatz Mechaver Lof Haraya. Okay. But if the debate is about whether he paid or not, then the Sochir is a Nishba Venota. Okay. What does this have to do with, you understand yet, what does this have to do with Rav and Shmuel? Does it or not? Or that we're going on to something new? I'm sorry? Well, let's see. So we have to keep reading the Gemara to know what the problem is, or we're already supposed to know the problem. You keep reading, that's right. Hamid the Seifa Baraya, Heavy Resha Below Raya. What does that mean? Miri, did you understand that? You were the one that said about the Edom. So what does that mean? Where? Which case?
In Kisa.
Yes.
The Seifa shows that the fact that it didn't mention it by the regular Sechir means that they don't need Adam for that.
That's right. Now, of course, you can. How compelling is this inference? You know, you could say it's not so compelling. But this is what the Gemara is saying. That it says in the Seifa, in the Kisitsa case, what does it say? Hamotzi mechavero olof haraya. You got to bring raya. What kind of raya you think you have to bring? What kind of raya? Edim. So says the Gemara that the second case, what we call the Sefer, is talking where you need Edim. And in the first case, what's the first case? The case where it's just the Nishba Venoto case, apparently you don't need Edim. So what is that saying then? That even where you don't have any Edim, it's still Nishba Venoto, which goes against Rav and Shmuel. So this was the kasha that the Gemara asked. And let's just finish the answer. What did the Gemara answer to this? Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, what? Reisha v'seifa b'raya, raya de l'shalim katani, raya de shvua lo katani. Miri, what does that mean?
When it mentioned raya in the Kisa case, it was talking about Adam that he was hired, but Adam that he has to pay, that caused him to pay. So it didn't mention, it wasn't talking about the kind of Adam that the person was hired. That's why it didn't say anything about the
pay. Yeah. No, it was the raya that was mentioned in the Sefer, but not mentioned. In other words, the raya that is mentioned in the whole, in the Sefer's case is a raya about paying. Isn't that true? Because in the Katsitsa case, what's the halacha? Hamatz mechaver lof haraya. What does that mean, hamatz mechaver lof haraya? That if the socher wants to collect what? The two dinarim, he's going to have to prove it. Now, the only proof, Shavua is not going to work. They're not going to give him the ability to swear to get the second dinar, right? So the proof, he's going to have to produce Edim. So that, the Edim to pay, that's what's only mentioned in this Sefer. And you don't have anything of that in the Reisha. But what kind of Edim does the entire Brisa just not discuss? Edim for the purpose of what? To allow the socher to swear. That the Brisa just doesn't discuss. Meaning what? It doesn't mean maybe you do need it, but the Brisa just doesn't talk about it. So,
if the socher is allowed to swear, then he gets.
If their edim would test,
as opposed to
throwing it. But in the
as opposed to edim that would say he was not paid yet, so pay him. That kind of edim you don't have in the Reisha. But, and that's only discussed in the Sefer, but as far as requiring edim so that what? Requiring edim so that to give the socher a chance to swear in order to collect, what kind of edim would you need for that? That edim that would testify that he was hired, right? That the Brisa just doesn't get into that discussion. So it's not, you can't infer from this Brisa that you don't need Edim. Maybe you do need Edim, but the Brisa is just not discussing it. Which is really, I have to run. So that's really the, because what is the obvious, what is the really the main objective of this Brisa? Is to distinguish between what? A Katsitsa case and a regular case. That's really what the Brisa is out to talk about. Now whether in the regular case you have to have Edim, you don't have to have Edim, that's an issue that's not really, you know, basic to what the Brisa is really coming to teach us. I think the Gemara's answer is really a very good answer, that the proof to begin with was not so compelling. Okay, so for tomorrow, try to finish up. Tomorrow we have to finish up this Gemara. I want to review the Gemara, and I'll give you we have also a Balamor and a Milchamis to do on the Sugyas. I want to do that first. The Balamor and the Milchamis in the back. And once we finish that, you'll have Mara Makomas on this issue about me go to Pater from the Shavua. Okay? About the what? Yes. Which Tosfos did I put down?